From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And on day one, I will launch the largest deportation program of criminals in American history. We're going to get them out. We have to. I will invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. You know, 1798. That's when they ran the country a little tougher than we run it today.
As Donald Trump threatens to invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, we'll look at how immigrant rights lawyers are preparing to challenge Trump's plans to close the border and deport millions. We'll speak to Lee Learned of the ACLU, then to Arizona, a state won by Donald Trump, but where a Democrat, Ruben Gallego, won a heated Senate race. Arizona voters approved a constitutional amendment guaranteeing abortion access while also backing a harsh anti-immigrant ballot initiative. Then we'll look at Trump's pick to head the EPA, former New York Congressman Lee Zeldin, who has a long record of opposing environmental regulations. Finally, the head of the UN climate summit in the petro state of Azerbaijan is caught on tape promoting new fossil fuel deals.
Well, definitely in a couple of years, I think the production levels will start declining. Not now, not next year. And even with net zero, we will have a certain amount of oil and natural gas being produced, perhaps forever.
Those were the words of the CEO of the COP29 climate summit. He thought he was speaking to a fossil fuel investor. He was actually talking to an undercover investigator from Global Witness. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, the Palestinian Health Ministry reports Israeli strikes have killed at least 47 people and wounded more than 180 in the past 24 hours. Among the dead is a child who was killed when a massive Israeli airstrike tore through a makeshift camp for displaced Palestinians in Al-Mawasi, an area in southern Gaza designated by the Israeli army as a so-called safe humanitarian zone. This comes as the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has again warned famine's imminent in northern Gaza. On Tuesday, top UN humanitarian official Joyce Msuya told the Security Council Israel's committed grave international crimes by blocking aid to Palestinians. She added, quote, "The daily cruelty we see in Gaza Gaza seems to have no limits."
Most of Gaza is now a wasteland of rubble. What distinction was made and what precautions were taken if more than 70% of civilian housing is either damaged or destroyed? Essential commercial goods and services, including electricity, have been all but cut off. This has led to increasing hunger, starvation, and now, as we have heard, potentially famine. We are witnessing acts reminiscent of the gravest international crimes.
The Biden administration said Tuesday it will not limit weapons transfers to Israel, even after Israeli forces failed to meet a U.S.-imposed 30-day deadline to increase the flow of food and humanitarian aid into Gaza. Aid groups say Israel has only worsened the catastrophe over that period, with the amount of aid reaching Gaza now at its lowest level since December. The decision to continue arming Israel despite widespread evidence of gross human rights abuses appears to violate multiple U.S. laws, including the Leahy Law, the Foreign Assistance Act, and the Arms Export Control Act. On Tuesday, a coalition of former Biden administration employees who've resigned in protest of U.S. policy released a video calling on Biden to uphold the law and halt U.S. weapons transfers to Israel.
There is no provision in U.S. or international law that allows extra time to starve people.
Joe Biden's administration has repeatedly put Israel's interests over the interests of the American people.
Even at the expense of not enforcing our own laws.
That's why I resigned from the State Department.
The State Department.
State Department.
The State Department's diplomatic corps.
The Department of Education.
The Department of the Interior.
Army.
Department of the Interior.
Department of the Air Force.
to see our interviews with many of the Biden administration officials who've resigned over Gaza, go to democracynow.org. Israel's continued its relentless air and ground attacks on Lebanon, killing at least 24 people in Beirut's southern suburbs and towns and Mount Lebanon governorate. Israeli forces have persistently targeted residential buildings and other civilian infrastructure. Meanwhile, Israeli authorities issued new forced evacuation orders for residents in certain areas south of Beirut ahead of more Israeli military attacks. The National Press Club in Washington, D.C., has handed its top award for press freedom to Wael Al-Dadu, Al Jazeera's Gaza bureau chief, for continuing to report on Israel's assault on the besieged territory despite enduring, quote, unspeakable personal tragedies, unquote. Just weeks into the war, Al-Dadu was live on air when he was informed his wife, his 7-year-old daughter and 15-year-old son were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the Nusayrat refugee camp. Another of Al-Dadu's children, Hamza Al-Dadu, who was also a journalist and camera person for Al Jazeera, was then killed in a separate Israeli attack early in January. Earlier this year, Al-Dadu was evacuated from Gaza to receive medical care in Qatar for injuries he suffered while covering an Israeli attack on a school sheltering displaced Palestinians in Khan Yunis. At the time, Wael Al-Dadu's camera person, Samer Abu Dhaka, was left to bleed to death as Israeli forces blocked ambulances from reaching the scene for several hours. Wael Al-Dadu is now living in Germany. Donald Trump selected former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee to become U.S. ambassador to Israel. Huckabee is a leading U.S. Christian Zionist who, in recent years, has led all-inclusive evangelical Christian tours of Israel. Huckabee has openly advocated for Israel's annexation of the occupied West Bank and Gaza. During a failed run for the Republican presidential nomination in 2008, he declared, quote, there's no really such thing as a Palestinian, adding that's been a political tool to try and force land away from Israel, unquote. In 2017, he told Politico, quote, there's no such thing as a settlement. There are communities, there are neighborhoods, there are cities. There's no such thing as an occupation, he said. Meanwhile, Trump has named his longtime friend and golfing partner, Steve Witkoff, as a special envoy to the Middle East. Witkoff is a real estate investor from Florida with no foreign policy experience. Donald Trump will nominate Fox News personality Pete Hegseth to become Secretary of Defense. He co-anchors the weekend morning talk show Fox and Friends, where Trump has been a frequent guest. He previously led Concerned Veterans for America, a group backed by the far-right billionaire Koch brothers. Hegseth served as infantry captain in the Army National Guard, completing tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. He was a guard at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba in 2004 and 5, and has argued the prison should not be closed. In 2019, Hegseth successfully lobbied Trump to pardon 3 U.S. service members accused of war crimes, including an officer found guilty of ordering soldiers to open fire on unarmed Afghan civilians. Hegseth is author of the book The War on Warriors, which argues the U.S. military has been made weak by diversity and inclusion initiatives. He's promised to fire so-called woke generals and has argued women should not have combat roles, calling men more capable. Donald Trump has nominated John Ratcliffe to lead the Central Intelligence Agency. Ratcliffe is a former Texas Republican congressman, former federal prosecutor who served as director of national intelligence from 2020 until Trump left office in 2021. Ratcliffe was a member of Trump's impeachment advisory team in 2019 when he questioned witnesses during Trump's first impeachment trial hearings. Donald Trump has named Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to lead a new Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. In announcing the appointments, Trump said the billionaires would be tasked with dismantling government bureaucracy, cutting waste, and restructuring entire federal agencies, with their work set to conclude by July 4, 2026. Musk is the world's richest person, as majority owner of SpaceX, which receives billions of dollars in contracts from NASA, the Pentagon, and U.S. spy agencies. The Associated Press reports Elon Musk spent $200 million through his Political Action Committee on efforts to help Trump win the election. Senate Republican leaders are gathering behind closed doors today to pick a new majority leader to replace Mitch McConnell. Three leading candidates have emerged: South Dakota Senator John Thune, Texas's John Cornyn, and Florida's Rick Scott. Meanwhile, the chair of the House Freedom Caucus, Republican Andy Harris, said a far-right Congress member might challenge Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson for the gavel during leadership elections. In more news from Capitol Hill, the House has voted down a bill that would have allowed incoming President Trump to target nonprofit organizations as political enemies. The bill failed to win the two-thirds majority needed for approval. This is Texas Democratic Congressmember Lloyd Doggett of Austin speaking ahead of Tuesday's vote.
Mr. Speaker, this bill authorizes Donald Trump to recklessly impose a death penalty on any nonprofit in America that happens to be on his enemies list. With this bill, he can destroy the very life of civil society in this country, one group after another, even though the group involved that he targets as a terrorist supporting group has not violated a single law.
A federal jury in Virginia has found the U.S. military contractor CACI Premier Technology liable for the torture of three prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison during the U.S.-led occupation of Iraq in the early 2000s. The landmark verdict came after 16 years of litigation. It's the first time a civilian contractor has been found legally responsible for the gruesome abuses at Abu Ghraib, which included murder, sexual assault and rape, the use of attack dogs, sleep deprivation, prolonged isolation, dietary manipulation, induced hypothermia, mock executions, and the humiliation of prisoners. On Tuesday, the plaintiff's lawyer, Bahar Azmi of Center for Constitutional Rights, said the jury had rendered an important verdict.
Each plaintiff, $3 million in compensatory damages and $11 million each in punitive damages, sending a strong message that this kind of corporate malfeasance and neglect and recklessness and deflection is outrageous and deserves to be punished.
And in Scotland, climate activists are appearing in court this week in a bid to stop the development of the Rosebank oil field in the North Sea by the Norwegian company Equinor. Earlier this year, the UK's Labour government acknowledged the previous Conservative government's approval of the Rosebank project without considering whether its full climate impact was unlawful. If the plaintiffs are successful, the landmark case could help establish a precedent for all new oil and gas development. This is climate campaigner Lauren MacDonald speaking outside the Court of Session at Edinburgh, Scotland.
This case, if we win, it could set a precedent that could stop all new oil and gas drilling in the UK and further afield, which is absolutely needed because when we look at the intense rainfall and flooding that we've seen here in the UK and across Europe this year, we know that this is only going to become worse and be made more frequent as long as we continue burning fossil fuels.
Democracy Now will be broadcasting all next week from the UN Climate Summit in Azerbaijan. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. As Donald Trump threatens to invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, we look at how immigrant rights lawyers are preparing to challenge Trump's claim that he will close the border and engage in the largest deportation campaign in U.S. history. Back in a minute.
Paranoia is in bloom. The PR transmissions will resume. I try to push, try to keep us all down. Like to keep this trapped in greed.
Uprising by Muse. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Immigrant rights lawyers are preparing to battle with Donald Trump as he vows to carry out the largest mass deportation in U.S. history once he takes office in January. This week, Trump names several key figures who will oversee his plan. Stephen Miller has been tapped to serve as White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. During the first Trump administration, Miller helped orchestrate the Muslim ban, push for the separation of immigrant families, and back the termination of DACA. That's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that's granted protection to certain undocumented people brought to the U.S. as children. Trump has also picked Thomas Homan to serve as a so-called border czar. Homan served as acting director of ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, during Trump's first term, and has also been described as one of the intellectual authors of Trump's zero-tolerance policy that separated thousands of migrant children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border. Trump's also nominated South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem to serve as the next Secretary of Homeland Security. NBC News is reporting the incoming Trump administration's already talking to private prison companies about drastically expanding immigrant detention centers, including building some near major U.S. cities. Days before last week's election, Trump spoke about invoking the Alien Enemies Act of 1798.
And on day one, I will launch the largest deportation program of criminals in American history. We're going to get them out. We have to. I will invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. You know, 1798, that's when they ran the country a little tougher than we run it today.
So that was Donald Trump speaking a day before the election. This is Stephen Miller speaking in February at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, where he outlined how mass deportations could be carried out.
Seal the border. No illegals in. Everyone here goes out. That's very straightforward. In terms of the policy sets to accomplish this, as President Trump showed in his first term, It's a series of interlocking domestic and foreign policies to accomplish this goal. In no particular order, just to rattle off a few fast, you have your Safe Third Agreements, you have Remain in Mexico, finish the wall, you have robust prosecutions of illegal aliens, you do interior repatriation flights to Mexico, not back to the north of Mexico. It's very important. You re-implement Title 42. You have several muscular 212Fs. That's the travel ban authority. We did a few of those in the Trump administration. You would bring those back and add new ones on top of that. You would establish large-scale staging grounds for removal flights. So you grab illegal immigrants, and then you move them to the staging grounds, and that's what the planes are waiting for federal law enforcement to then move those illegals home. You deputize the National Guard to carry out immigration enforcement.
So that's Stephen Miller. We're joined right now by Lee Gallant, deputy director of the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project, argued some of the most high-profile immigration cases during the first Trump administration, including the one to stop Trump's family separation policy. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Lee. It's great to have you with us. Okay, so you hear Stephen Miller laying it out, and it's the first appointments that Trump has made. How are you beginning to deal with this? What do you see is being laid out here?
Yeah, so we have been preparing for nearly a year for this. I think the first time around, we were caught off guard. We moved very quickly. But this time, I think we were prepared for it more. And so since the winter, we have had multiple attorneys at the National House of the ACLU preparing for all these policies that are being threatened. And the military is being threatened to be used. We're preparing for that. The mass deportations, potential for more family separation, border policies that would restrict asylum seekers. So we're preparing for all, but we're clear-eyed that it's not going to be easy. And the one thing I would stress is that it can't be done solely through the courts. We will be in the courts, but it needs to be a national effort, similar to what happened with family separation, where the public said, wait, enough is enough. That's a red line taking little babies away. Went out to the streets peacefully to protest, let it be known. Yes, we want immigration reform, but not something like this. We don't want the military walking through the streets. People need to make that clear. We need some kind of balanced approach. We are not opposed to basic immigration reform, but this cannot be a situation where we're just going after immigrants left and right.
So talk about what Miller is threatening, and of course, right. most importantly, what Trump is threatening.
Right.
They are building detention centers, they are saying. They're going to prepare them between New York and Philadelphia, outside Denver and Chicago. How does this work?
Well, we'll see how they try and do it. I mean, we don't know it. I mean, I'm not sure the logistics are there, but we're concerned about it, and we're not going to underestimate how egregious the policies may be. Well, the first thing we're preparing for is what President Trump has said about the Alien Enemies Act, the law from 1798. He's saying he can use the military to start deporting people. We think that's absolutely wrong. It would be illegal. The law is very clear that you need an invasion from a foreign government. This is not an invasion from foreign government. Immigrants coming to seek safety or a better life. So if he tries to use the military under the Alien Enemies Act, we would be prepared for it. We're prepared for if he tries to use the National Guard. But if it's just going to be straight enforcement, egregious enforcement, I mean, we're going to have to do what we can do, try to get individual lawyers for people. But I think people also need to recognize that from a policy standpoint, we need immigrants here for a variety of reasons, including for the economy. And so I hope that businesses will push back and say, we need these workers. The other thing that's going to happen is if he starts deporting everyone like he's claiming, we're going to be seeing more family separation. There's U.S. citizen children who have undocumented parents. They're going to be left alone, or they're going to have to move to a country that they've never stepped foot in. But to your question of how it's going to work logistically, we don't know, but we're not underestimating how much resources they're going to put into it.
So let's go to Homan. During a recent interview on 60 Minutes, Trump's pick to be the so-called border czar, Tom Homan, said the mass deportation campaign could also target U.S.-born children, you know, born to undocumented parents. He was interviewed by Cecilia Vega.
We have seen one estimate that says it would cost $88 billion to deport a million people a year.
I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Is that what American taxpayers should expect?
What price do you put on our national security? Is that worth it?
Is there a way to carry out mass deportation without separating families?
Of course there is. Families can be deported together.
Of course there is. Take those U.S. babies and deport them with their parents. Lee, you have directly dealt with all sorts of cases like this. What is he talking about?
Yeah, so I suspect he's not claiming that they can actually deport the U.S. citizen. That would be flatly illegal, and obviously
he
we would challenge
it. Of course.
Right, but I think what he's saying, I mean, I don't know. You're right. It's ambiguous. But what he may be saying is we're going to deport the parents, and then, of course, the children are going to have to go with them. That's not necessarily true. That means I think there's going to be family separation because children are going to stay behind with a relative, and so they're never going to see their parents again, potentially, or they're going to have to move their children to a country that they have no connection to. If he is actually, as maybe that clip is suggesting, thinking he can deport U.S. citizen children, I've never heard that. That is flatly illegal, and we would challenge it. But even if that's not what he's talking about, even if he's just forcing this choice on parents, either bring my child with me to this country or leave them behind, that's, you know, as egregious as it gets. Every president has had the authority to deport parents with U.S. citizen children, but they've all used the discretion not to, so we don't separate families unless we're talking about hardened criminals or national security threats. So we're really talking about a sea change in American immigration law that I think is ultimately going to be something history looks back on and says, what have we done?
Homan started working under Obama. He then became the interim ICE director under Trump. 5,000 kids, a number you know well, what, 5,500
right.
kids
right.
separated from their parents. Still 1,000 kids are separated from their parents?
So the amazing thing is that we don't have all the records. We're still looking for families, but we estimate that there may be 1,000 children, little children, still separated from their parents, that it's been now 6-7 years they haven't seen their parents. Many of them were separated when they were just babies or toddlers, will not even really remember their parents. And the other thing I want to stress is that people think, well, if they're reunited, you know, the 4,000 the ACLU has been able to reunite, They're fine now. They are suffering so much trauma. I mean, I'm talking to families, a three-year-old boy who got reunited. He's standing by the window looking to see if men are going to come and take him away again. A little boy saying, Mommy, I don't want to go to bed because that's when they took me away. So the trauma is unbelievable, even for the families who are separated. You know, this is, I think, the worst thing I have seen in 30 years, the family separation. President Trump is not ruling it out again, and Thomas Homan is trying to whitewash how bad it was, saying that it wasn't really that bad. It was as bad as anything you can imagine, and now they're talking about doubling down on separating families.
So Trump was forced to reverse his executive order separating children. As you said, that didn't just come from lawyers like you going to court. It came from millions of people in the streets.
Right.
It was universal condemnation. You have the Bush-appointed judge calling the separations one of the most shameful chapters in the history of our country. Now, under Obama, he engaged in the largest number of deportations in U.S. history.
Right.
Then we move into Trump. At this point, since Trump has made very clear what he's about to do, what can President Biden do preemptively? I mean, a number of people have argued in law journals about pardoning undocumented immigrants preemptively.
Yeah, I think there are some things he can do. I'm not sure that he has the power to really stop all this in these next 2 months, and I don't know whether the administration will do it. We're certainly talking to them about things they can do to make sure that, for example, our settlement, giving rights to these families who were separated, is secure, and that some other things. I don't know that he's going to be able to pardon all these people. I think we need to do what we can in these next 2 months, but really start gearing up for a Trump administration where I think it's going to be, you know, worse than anything we've seen. We're talking about really horrible anti-immigrant sentiment. And I think that's one of the things we really need to reverse here, is how bad the anti-immigrant sentiment has gotten. In my 30 years, I have never seen it this bad. The one thing that I'm hopeful for is that the American public says, well, look, we wanted immigration reform, but you're now starting to cross the line past what we wanted. The same thing that happened in the first administration, where people said, wait, we wanted immigration reform, but we don't want you taking little babies away. I think if the public sees the military in the streets or these huge deportation camps or family separation again, I'm hopeful that they will come out and say, wait, that's not what we wanted.
I wanted to end with that famous audio track of the children in 2018 that ProPublica obtained, kids who were being held at Customs and Border Protection facility after being separated from their families. The kids believed to be between the ages of 4 and 10. They can be heard screaming, Mommy and Poppy. This is an excerpt. It's incredibly disturbing. We're not hearing it right now. We're going to try to bring it up. Well, I think most people maybe who are tuned into this, unfortunately, we can't play it at the moment, hearing the crying and the mocking by the guards of this, of the agony. And the reason I also brought it up is ProPublica brought it out, a nonprofit news organization. And I wanted to get your final comment.